Hello, and welcome back to There's a Book for That. We're continuing with our Valentine's Day series, and today is actually Valentine's Day. This means I finally get to wax lyrical about the main book that I wanted to talk about during this Valentine's Day extravaganza. A book by Turkish author, the winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature, Orhan Pamuk, and it's called A Strangeness in My Mind. I read this book in 2022, and it's possible that this book changed my life, or at least gave me a lot to think about, a puzzle to solve. It remains a mystery, nibbling away at the wiring in my mind, and I am inviting you to come along and see if you know the answer to the question, why would a man who wrote love letters to a girl for 3 years suddenly find his happiness with another girl after being tricked into marrying the second girl that he did not love? The book is not really about this. In fact, the book is about many other things, but I was so distracted by this question that I could barely focus on anything else. Here's the blurb from the book, even though the first part is not quite accurate, as we will see. Quote, A Strangeness in My Mind is a novel Orhan Pamuk has worked on for 6 years. It is the story of Boza Selim of Lut and the woman to whom he wrote 3 years' worth of love letters and their life in Istanbul. This part isn't accurate. It's not her he was writing to, but okay, fine. In the 4 decades between 1969 and 2012, Mevlut works in a number of different jobs on the streets of Istanbul, from selling yogurt and cooked rice to guarding a car park. He observes many different kinds of people thronging the streets. He watches as most of the city is demolished and rebuilt, and he sees migrants from Anatolia making a fortune. At the same time, he witnesses all of the transformative moments, political clashes, and military coups that shaped the country. He always wonders what it is that separates him from everyone else, the source of that strangeness in his mind. But he never stops selling boza during winter evenings and trying to understand who his beloved really is. What matters more in life? What we wish for, or what our fate has in store? Do our choices dictate whether we will be happy or not? Or are these things determined by forces beyond our control? A Strangeness in My Mind tries to answer these questions while portraying the tensions between urban and family life and the fury and helplessness of women inside their homes. End quote. Mevlut stands out to me as an interesting character in literature because there is nothing outstanding about him except this one decision to be happy. I'm fascinated by that because most people, even when they get exactly what they worked for, what they yearned for, still find it difficult to be happy. He's not rich, though he could have been if his father had been a different man. He's not successful, though he could have been had he been a better student. He's not a playboy, though he could have been, as he's described as being handsome, and had a very physical job that would have given him a hot barge to go with it. In short, he's an ordinary man with a very ordinary life. He works as a waiter, a rice vendor, sells boza, a traditional drink, never makes it to owning his own store, yet he manages to keep his family going, and most importantly, he's happy with that. I don't mean content or just getting by and grumbling, I mean happy. Fine, lots of people manage to be happy with their lot, but how many of us would be happy knowing you had been tricked into marrying someone you did not love? In an interview on the subject of the book, Orhan Pamuk says, quote, Generally, novels are written to explore the individuality of middle or upper class heroes. They also convey the humanity of the pure characters, but they emerge as lovable or color, challenging social conditioning that stands on the edge of the actual individual. I wanted to write a story about an individual who is poor, but has a completely different, special story. There is a lack of individuality in poverty, but I didn't want to bring those two together. On the contrary, let Mevlut be more individual than anyone else. Let him be the most individual in the book. Let that be processed the most. For me, that was the intellectual effort. Let me write a hero, let him be the most developed individual, but let him be the one with the least features. I believe he completely succeeded because Mevlut is the most ordinary of men, and yet he makes, in my mind, one extraordinary decision that guarantees him a happy home and life. If I had to write the summary of the book, I would emphasize the parts that we're going to be talking about today. Namely, that the girl that Mevlut writes to for 3 years is not the woman that he marries, and that the woman that he marries turns out to be the woman that he loves, and she believes she is both the woman he was writing to and his beloved. Confused? Duh. But imagine how confused you would be if you were Mevlut. So let's rewind and find out how this all transpired. Cast your mind back. Turkey, the 1960s. Mevlut is a young man at his cousin's wedding. He sees a beautiful young woman with enchanting eyes. Too shy and poor to approach her, he speaks to his cousin Suleiman, who says that he will pass on letters to her on Mevlut's behalf. Suleiman tells our Mevlut that the girl's name is Raiha. So it is to Raiha that Mevlut addresses his letters. Reams of paper and gallons of ink later, he finally manages to persuade Suleiman to help him elope with his beloved. Where I'm from, this kind of elopement is quite common. Perhaps your parents don't approve of your love, or more likely you're just too young and they'll maybe like you to finish school. But you can't wait, so you decide to run away together. Sometimes you're pregnant and sometimes you're not, but this is a thing that happens. I guess part of the logic, which is what happens in the book, is that after you've run away like that, what are your parents going to do? Hate you forever? No, of course not. You force their hand. If they want to see you and their grandkids, they'll come around, and then you can always do things properly with the diaries, etc., etc. So this is what Mevlut and his cousin decide to do. They're going to run away with this girl that he's been writing letters to all this time. Obviously, the cousin has spoken to the girl, said, "Are you happy to do this?" And she, based on the wonderful letters and in collusion with her older sister, says yes. So now I'm going to read from where he actually speaks to the girl for the first time. She's come to find him. You know, they arranged a meeting place, what. And now they're going to run away together. First of all, I think that's such a brave and reckless move for a girl of like 18, 19, but okay. Quote, "He heard a rustling among the leaves and the girl calling out to him in a whisper, 'Mevlut.' It was a voice full of love." I don't know. A voice full of... Let me try again in a voice full of love. "Mevlut. Mevlut." No, I don't think that's a voice full of love. "Mevlut. Mevlut. Mevlut. Yeah, maybe, you know, a bit panty, a bit anguished. Mevlut." It sounds like Dawson's Creek, basically, is what he's saying. "It was a voice full of love. The voice of someone who had read the letters he'd sent during his military service. A trusting voice. Mevlut remembered those letters now, hundreds of them, each written with genuine love and desire. He remembered how he had devoted his entire being to winning over that beautiful girl and the scenes of happiness he'd conjured in his mind. Now, at last, he'd managed to get the girl. He couldn't see much, but in that magical night, he drew like a sleepwalker to the sound of her voice." Ah, hey, romance! End quote. So guys, they're holding hands. They're running through the trees of this forest, walking in the dark. At some point, these dogs, they have to run. And they're going. Cousin's supposed to meet them somewhere. And we're back. Quote, "They reached the road to Akshahir, out of breath. Mevlut was sure they were on time. All that remained now was for Suleiman to turn up with the van, and then nobody could take Raya away from him. Mevlut had begun every letter invoking this girl's lovely face and her unforgettable eyes, inscribing her beautiful name, Raya, with lavish care and desperate abandon at the head of each missive. Now he was so happy at the thought of those feelings that he couldn't help but quicken his steps. In the darkness, he could scarcely see the face of the girl he was eloping with. He thought that he might at least take hold of her and kiss her, but Raya gently rebuffed his attempts with the bundle she was carrying. Mevlut liked that. He decided that it would be better not to touch the person he was to spend the rest of his life with until they were married. Hand in hand, they crossed the little bridge over the river Sar. Raya's in his was light and delicate as a bird. A cold breeze carried the scent of thyme and bay leaves over the murmuring water. 10 minutes later, they saw the taillights of Suleiman's van beside the gurgling fountain. Mevlut felt himself drowning in happiness. He felt bad for having doubted Suleiman. Raya took her bundle and sat in the back of the van, engulfed in darkness. Mevlut and Suleiman had planned it that way in case word got out that Raya had run away and the gendarme started searching vehicles on the road. End quote.
Hey!
So he gets in the van. She's at the back of the van. He thanks the cousin. They go forward. Then it turns out that she hasn't properly closed the door of the van. You've been there. The cousin says, hey, she hasn't closed the door. Get back there. So Mevlut goes back to close it. And in a peal of lightning that illuminates her face, he finally gets a clear look at this woman. Quote, for the first time, Mevlut got a proper look at the face of the woman who he was to spend a lifetime with. He would remember the utter strangeness of that moment for the rest of his life. End quote. They get back in the car. That's not the right girl. He's trying to process it. How did he end up in this? What? Who is that person? That's not her. Is that her? No. His cousin, this sneaky, wicked man, asks him, no regrets? The cousin drops them off at the train station, tells Mevlut to make his new wife happy, and drives off. Mevlut's mind is a mess. He takes a closer look at her again, now in the lights of the train building. Quote, a closer look, this time enough to confirm what he had glimpsed but not quite believed while shutting the back door of the van. He looked away. This was not the girl he had seen at the wedding of his uncle's eldest son, Korkut, in Istanbul. This was her older sister. They had shown him the pretty sister at the wedding, then they had given him the ugly sister instead. Mevlut realized he had been tricked. He was ashamed and couldn't even look at the girl whose name may well not have been Raya. Imagine, he's run away with her. He can't even be sure that's her name. Okay. Coming from a Christian tradition, the Bible tells the story of Jacob. It's told in the book of Genesis. In this story, we learn that Jacob, also known as a trickster, falls in love with a beautiful girl named Rachel. He proposes marriage and the father says yes. The wedding goes ahead. But when he unveils his new wife, I'm very anti-veil since reading this book. Everyone must show their face from the beginning. So he removes the veil and he finds that it's not Rachel, it's her sister, Leah. Now, Jacob, being poor and lacking the money for the dowry, has worked 7 years for Rachel's father, Laban, to win his wife. But then Laban, on the wedding, says, culturally, we can't marry off the younger girl and leave the older girl at home to be an old maid. Are you mad, Jacob? Take your wife and go. Imagine being 21 or so, falling in love with your dream girl, working 7 years, and he's not working in an office, yeah? He would have been doing like farm work, animal things, intense work for 7 years, no holidays. And then you find out that you've been scammed, no refunds, no returns. He just has to accept it. What can he do? He has no family to support him, no lawyers. He's just stuck. The thing is, Jacob still wants his original dream girl, Rachel, the one he thought he was marrying. And the culture of the time being what it was, he's allowed to have two wives. So he goes up to his father-in-law. He's like, hey, you got me once, but I still want my girl. And the father-in-law is like, no problem. 7 years. So he works another 7 years. Yeah, he's 35 now. Roundabout. Finally gets his dream girl. In that time, he's been married to the older sister who is popping out babies with the expected regularity. How would you feel as Leah, the older sister, the unwanted consolation prize for your husband, knowing that your father considered you such a burden, he tricked a man into marrying you? Even when you were getting into the veil on the day of the wedding to marry this man, what were you thinking? You see your husband going to work every day knowing that he's working that hard to marry your sister, that your sister is worth 14 years of his life, and you none. You are a zero. You are a minus. He didn't marry you. He never did. Not in his heart. And yet you are stuck with him, having his babies, knowing he would leave you in a heartbeat for your sister. It's a terrible position to be in, and we're really lucky that in this age, we get to choose who we marry, mostly. But having this history in mind, knowing this story, when I realized that Mavlut didn't know this woman that he had eloped with, that he had been tricked like Jacob, I was so worried for Raya. I get into the books, I'm like, oh no. By the way, all this is happening on page 9 of a hefty book. Like, we really get into the action. So I was worried about this lady from like the beginning. I was like, am I going to be stuck with this book? You know, sometimes you don't even want to continue if you think you know how it's going to go and it's going to be bad. So I'm like, am I going to read this book about this woman whose life was ruined by a mistake? I was really worried. What life would she have with this man who never loved her and spent 3 years writing to her sister? I continue the book. And on the way home, on the way to the new home, on the train, with this stranger that she's talking to for the first time now, even though she's been receiving his letters for 3 years, she realizes from his behavior that he's disappointed, and she begins to cry. Quote, 2 hours later, at dawn, Mavlut saw there were tears in Raya's eyes. The compartment was still empty, and the train was making its noisy way down a purple-hued landscape with cliffs at every corner. Do you want to go back home? Mavlut asked her. Have you changed your mind? She cried even harder. Mavlut put his arm around her shoulders, awkwardly, but then because it was so uncomfortable, he pulled his arm back. Raya cried for a long time. Mavlut felt guilt and remorse. You don't love me, she said at length. Why do you say that? Your letters were so loving, but you tricked me. Was it really you who wrote them? I wrote them all myself, said Mavlut. Raya kept crying. An hour later, when the train stopped at Afyonkarahisar station, Mavlut jumped off the carriage and bought some bread. Mavlut was happy to watch Raya as she looked out of the carriage at the towns that passed. Everything was interesting. The whole world was new. She fell asleep with her head on his shoulder. Mavlut couldn't deny that this made him happy, nor that it made him feel a sense of responsibility. Mavlut fell asleep, surprised that he was about to fall asleep. They woke up together when the train stopped at Eskişehir and panicked for a moment, thinking the gendarme had caught them. But then they relaxed and smiled at each other. Raya had a very genuine smile. It was hard to believe that she might be hiding anything or to suspect her of scheming in some way. She had an open, decent face full of light. Mavlut knew deep down that she must have colluded with those who had tricked him. But when he looked at her face, he couldn't help but think that she had to be innocent in all this. As the train moved closer to Istanbul, they talked about the huge factories they passed along the way. Like her sisters, Raya had gone to elementary school and she could name the distant countries across the sea without too much trouble. Mavlut felt proud of her. End quote. Whew. So today, our aim is to be detectives because I'm so confused. What happened on this train that made this man tie his destiny to this woman and then never let her down once in all her life? Not once. Is it because she cried and made him feel guilt and remorse? How many of us have cried and nobody changed? Is it because she ate the bread that he gave her? She laid her head on his shoulder and made him feel a sense of responsibility? How many of us have been considered burdens? Asked, what do you bring to the table? This woman literally brought herself. I don't think she had a lira to her name when she ran away from home. And having run away from home, she really didn't have a lot of options. She had to try and make this work. But Mavlut, realizing he had kidnapped the wrong girl, and what if he had decided to give her back? What would she have done? Gone home in disgrace, it would have been awful. Yet he did not. Everything she needed, he provided. He made sure they had a little apartment with everything she needed and was considerate enough to think that he wouldn't buy everything in advance so that she could decorate and put her own stamp on the place. Of course, at the time he was thinking of her sister when he was making those plans, but when he gets home, he still follows through with the plan. He takes her shopping, she sets up the place how she wants, he makes sure there's food in the house. Option 3. Is it because she went to elementary school? And she knew geography. How many of us have been to school? Maybe we need less school. Maybe we need more. I don't know. What's the plan? There is no telling But it is sufficient to say that in this story, between meeting Raya, seeing her face, and getting home, Mevlut is finished. He is all in. I was so confused when I was reading this story, seeing how both active and passive Mevlut was in dealing with his unexpected fate. I actually started counting the pages. I went back, I was like, oh, maybe a page fell out and we see a big conversation between Mevlut and Raya, or at the very least, Mevlut and himself, in which he says something along the lines of, well, what's done is done, might as well make the most of it. Orhan Pamuk, being such an excellent writer, I don't believe that this is an oversight on his part. Maybe it was. If I ever meet him, I'm definitely talking about this for at least an hour. As I continue to read the book and see how happy Mevlut was with Raya, and I'll read you some of the passages in a bit, I realize that somewhere on that train, not only did he make peace with his destiny, but he allowed the seed of love to be sown in his heart, and then he resolved to keep the seed watered and safe and let it grow. How many of you have been with someone who you could see might have feelings for you, yet he was actively fighting them, or they were actively fighting them? Maybe you didn't fit in with their ideas about life, wrong race, wrong religion, wrong body. Or the opposite end, someone wanted to love you, but they couldn't for whatever reason. Mevlut stood at this intersection with an option he had not chosen and decided that life had given him lemons, and lemons were actually his preference. To this day, I am confused. I see so many stories of people who actively marry each other. We've seen those videos on TikTok where men throw cake in their women's faces even though they've been asked not to. People talking about their relationships, how they used to be so happy, now they're splitting up. People shitting on their spouses, making fun of their hobbies and interests, refusing to help out with chores or kids. But these are people that they chose to marry. I say yesterday's podcast, I have a fondness for arranged marriages, but even then you see a picture, you have a conversation or 10. You get to know the person for a little bit. Imagine you go through all of that, then you get stuck with some other random on the day. And they're too fat, too thin, too short, too tall. They have turkey teeth. What would you do? How would you react? Who would you fight first? Can you imagine Mevlut on Reddit? I wrote letters to a girl for 3 years. And I thought she had agreed to elope with me, but actually my cousin tricked me and now I'm stuck with her ugly sister. Am I the asshole? The internet would melt with people telling him to send her back, get rid of her, marry the other sister, kill your cousin. And yet, none of that happens. He protects her dignity, doesn't touch her till they're married, marries her quickly so they can protect her decency and also get to knock in the boots. And then he sets about making her happy forever. That's it. What was the secret? Having introduced us to this mystery, Orhan Pamuk invites us to go back to the beginning, saying, quote, in order to understand Mevlut's decision, his devotion to Raya, his fear of dogs, we must look back at his childhood. I did it for you. And I've come to believe, having pondered this mystery for so long, that Mevlut was a good man who had grown up with a father who was also, in his own way, a good man. A short-tempered, irritable man, but one who loved his family and did the best for them. We read of how once Mevlut moved to Istanbul with his father, because people were doing this kind of thing, you leave away from the family because you have to go where the jobs are, Mevlut would make soup every day for them to eat in the evening. The soup is delicious, my boy, said his father every time. I wondered if perhaps Mevlut had learned to be satisfied with what life gave, seeing his father happily eat the simple food he cooked every day. I'm not sure this is exactly right, because a running thread throughout the story is that the father felt that his brother swindled him out of a piece of land that would have allowed them to live happier, wealthier lives. Maybe Mevlut just wanted to get married and he had made up his mind that this is what he wanted out of life and he set out to get it. Having found Raya, though not in the form he expected, he decided that having a strong family life was the most important thing. I think that this might be the closest thing to the truth. And perhaps also part of Orhan Pamuk's commentary on modern society and the ways in which living as a migrant, even a few hundred miles from home, changes you. You are alone, away from home, extended family, living in a new way, a way that's actually really different in the history of human beings. The last 200 years or so have completely changed societies across the world. And the individualism of living alone, taking care of the house and home, having no one to speak to in the evenings, all these things can take a toll. Perhaps all you want after a time is just someone to share life with. Loneliness is one of the most common shared experiences of the modern age, and family has always been the one thing that people could turn to in an effort to try and fix that. In every community where modernity took a lead, we have stories of men going back home to marry someone familiar, who understands their culture and traditions, with varying results. Back home when I was growing up, there used to be a show about miners, and it was the same kind of thing. They went to work in the mines, and they didn't have their families, etc., etc., and all the kinds of things that go along with that. Perhaps culturally, there is more acceptance that love and marriage don't always go together. You marry someone that you can live with. And that perhaps these things, love, etc., it's not the most important thing that you need to build a strong, relatively happy family. And so maybe he's better primed for that than most of us would be. In a look back to Mevlut's past, there is a scene featuring Mevlut's cousin Korkut, the one who gets married to the older sister of his new wife, and Suleiman, the cousin who tricks him. Those two are brothers. They are talking to Haji Hamid, a local landowner who's also twice been to Mecca, and so he's very respected because he's obviously very wealthy and also very religious. The great Haji gives an interesting piece of advice, the which I will now share with you. Quote, "There are two kinds of love in our land. The first kind is when you fall in love with someone because you don't know them at all. In fact, most couples would never fall in love if they got to know each other even a little bit before getting married. This is why our blessed Prophet Muhammad did not think it was appropriate for there to be any contact between the boy and the girl before marriage. There is also the kind that happens when two people get married and fall in love after that, when they have a whole life to share between them. And that can only happen when you marry someone you don't know." End quote. While Mevlut is not a part of this conversation, it is no accident that this conversation is part of the book. And perhaps our guiding light into why, out of all the people in the book who get married for love, only Mevlut knows happiness throughout his marriage. Perhaps it is a universal truth, one that has underpinned relationships for millennia. Perhaps. I don't want to spend too much time on Mevlut falling in love with the wrong girl. Well, falling in love with the right girl by calling her the wrong name, I suppose. But what is worth mentioning here is that he goes to his cousin's wedding against his father's wishes. And while there, while talking to his cousins, they see this bride, the oldest one of three sisters, Vedia, is the one marrying Korkut, Mevlut's older cousin. Vedia's younger sisters, Samia, the youngest and prettiest, and Raya, the middle, not-so-special one as the boys refer to her, are of course present. They ask his cousins, what are their names? The cousin swaps the names around and says the pretty one is Raya and the not-so-special is Samia because he, Suleiman, the wicked cousin, wants to marry the pretty girl. So now Mevlut is obsessed with the girl that he thinks is Raya. He can't take his eyes off her, and a chance encounter brings them face to face, like, you know, they pass each other. And that's when he notices how beautiful her eyes are. So he goes back home to Istanbul and he talks to his friend who finished high school and is a good writer and says, we have to write her a letter. At this stage, he's 21, about to do his compulsory military service, and he knows that he can't marry her immediately. So the letter is like a placeholder. And this is what the first letter says. This is just a small part of it, but we have to get into it, right? Quote, I walk the dark streets at night, and suddenly I see those eyes before me. He's obsessed with her eyes. We get it. She can see. Your eyes are like ensorcelled arrows. This is why I wanted you to hear this. Ensorcelled. Bewitched. Your eyes are like ensorcelled arrows that pierce my heart and take me captive. I am your prisoner. I can think of nothing else but you ever since your eyes worked their way into my heart. Listen. Some people are getting ensorcelled arrows and you are there getting WYD. We must raise our standards. are delivered by the sneaky cousin, Suleiman, remember his name, to the wrong sister, the one whose name is actually Raya, our Raya, and for 3 years, she believes that she is a secret admirer who is serious about her. So obviously when the message comes and says, you know, do you want to get married? Meet me at the fountain. She's like, yes. She's been receiving these letters for 3 years from this young man who everyone agrees is good looking. So she must have felt really special, because as a plain girl, people will always remind you that you are plain. She's obviously ready to risk it all. And she does, until she's on the train and she realizes that this man was expecting somebody else. But on her side as well, she's like, this can't be the same man who's been writing me ensorcelled arrows. So she thinks that she must have been catfished, and this is not the man who was writing to her. Have you ever been catfished? It's no fun. My first foray into internet dating, maybe a decade ago, I met this guy on one of those dodgy sites. Probably plenty of fish, plenty of catfish. I see this hardy, we match, we start talking, we move on to a phone call, we talk politics and whatnot for 2 hours, agree to meet for dinner the next day. I turn up. I'm looking at this guy and something seems off. He doesn't not look like his picture, but he's definitely not the same person in the picture. I think it must have been his brother or his cousin or something, but I was so confused. I was like, you know, it was like the first time I didn't know that this is a thing that happens. Anyway, we sit and talk, and I realize that this is definitely the person I'd spoken to the night before, but not the face. Anyway, we eat and talk, and the whole time he's acting like everything is perfectly normal. Listen, men are so brave. Really brave people. I'm getting more and more annoyed because I left my house for the wish version of my date, and I don't like it. I mean, I don't claim to not be a dupe, but I think I definitely let you know in advance what you're getting. I'm not out here pretending to be something that I'm not. Anyway, it comes time to pay, and I act like I don't even know what money is. Normally, I'd be like, can we split it? This time, I'm just sitting on my hands. I'm like, no, I'm not going to pay to be lied to. Can you imagine? Thank goodness for WhatsApp. Now we can do video calls before we leave the house. Having said this, I managed to get catfished in 2022. I didn't do my due diligence. I think I was just stressed and I wanted to get out of the house for a while. There's this guy. And I'm like, okay, let me go. I get there and I'm looking at this man. I'm like, how did I match with someone shorter than me? Like, that's criteria number one. What is going on? But as I'd not really paid attention, I was like, maybe it's my mistake. Let me just make the most of it and go home. We eat, we talk, we eat some fries. And the whole time I'm like, this is so not my usual type. What happened? I get home. I check his profile and I'm like, oh, of course, that's why I was confused. This is not the same person. I send him a message with the picture that he used on the app and I'm like, who the hell is this guy? And this man says, it's someone that I love very much. What the fuck are you talking about? What does that have to do with me? You're not this guy. And then he's trying to tell me, oh, I didn't know you couldn't use other people's pictures. I'm sorry. Oh, listen. I like pretty people. So I think part of me is just like, you know, 1 out of 10 I can handle being catfished. But can you imagine being catfished on your wedding? I would die. Can you imagine if I turned up to make a lifelong contract? Lifelong contract in 1960s where people are not getting divorced. And it was this boring man with his truck driving stories. He spoke about driving a truck a lot. Guys, do you too? Maybe don't wear a veil at the wedding. No veils, no veils. Anyway, we're back on the train. He says, no, it was me who wrote you the letters with the ensorcelled arrows. Raya is like, okay, fine, I believe you. And she's like, okay, maybe he's just nervous. And we know already at this stage, she's already warming up. She's putting her head on his shoulder. He's smiling to himself. Oh, I'm so responsible. Again, we don't know why. But once they get back to the house, he shows her around the apartment, takes her shopping, and she starts setting up their home. Like, the whole thing is really interesting to me because I don't know if I would be just like, okay, yesterday I was in my father's house as a young girl. Today I'm a wife. Let me set up my new home. I need like a small period to adjust. Anyway, she's like, oh, you know, he seems stressed. Quote, I immediately sensed that once we'd given the house a thorough scrubbing and swept away the cobwebs, it would be cleansed of all Mevlut's disappointments, his fears, and the demons in his mind. End quote. How right she was. It seems especially astute considering at this stage she's known him for like 24 hours, but I believe she's right. Later on, he leaves the house to give her some privacy so that she can shower after all that cleaning. And when he gets home, we get the answer to the question that I've been asking, even though I find it hard to understand. Quote, Raya's narration reads, there's an interesting thing about the book. All the other characters speak in the first person, but Mevlut is the only one who borrows the narrator's voice and is always in the third person. Perhaps this is what Orhan Pamuk was saying in his interview. Mevlut is so significant, but also not so outstanding. We never truly understand him and the mysteries in his mind because he never actually addresses us. Anyway, Raya says, quote, Once I had bathed and put on some fresh clean clothes, I lay down on the bed with my back to the door and fell asleep without covering my hair. The text continues with Mevlut coming home, quote, Mevlut went up to her quietly. For a long time, he looked at Raya, lying on the bed, knowing that he would never forget this moment. Her body and feet looked delicate and pretty under her clothes. Her shoulders and arms stirred gently every time she breathed. For a moment, Mevlut felt that she was only pretending to be asleep. He lay down beside her. His heart was beating fast. If they started having sex now, and he wasn't even sure how to go about doing that, he would be taking advantage of her trust. Raya had put her trust in Mevlut. She had surrendered her life into his hands, and she had taken off her headscarf and shown him her long, beautiful hair before they were married, before they'd even had sex. As he looked at her long, flowing locks, Mevlut sensed that this trust and surrender would be enough to bind him to Raya and understood just how much he was going to love her. He wasn't alone in the world. He watched Raya breathing in and out, and his happiness seemed boundless. She had even appreciated his letters. End quote. Did he just want to feel appreciated? How does love grow? How is the seed sown? Is there some secret formula that anyone can use? Oftentimes, when we think about how love happens, we think about the feelings or the brain chemistry, but honestly, and this is the crux of the matter for me, the end of my peregrinations through the lives of my friends Mevlut and Raya, I think that this is largely a choice. We make choices about who we want to treat well and who we do not. We make choices about how to behave towards one another, and then we follow through with those choices. Throughout the ages, in a majority of societies, marriage has been about honouring a contract with another person, another family. It has been much less about how you feel about honouring that contract. This meant that people had to make choices, whether to be faithful, whether to take care of their children, whether to be kind to each other again, with varied results. You would think then that now that people can make choices about who to marry, their entire industry is dedicated to love and marriage, hence this day, we would be seeing the best marriages, the happiest people, but this is frequently not the case. The statistics for divorce are shockingly high, and this excludes breakups of relationships where people are not married. In these marriages where love is the center and we can choose to follow our bliss, it is often the case that our bliss moves with the wind and the green grass is always over the horizon. People do not choose to be good to each other and to stay making it work. Or sometimes they're expected to stay without the other half of the equation of making it work, where there's a partnership of people working towards each other's happiness. Just empty loyalty is demanded. Perhaps this is why the story of Mevlut struck me so. It was an aberration. It did not match with anything I've seen or heard, that one could make such a choice and stick with it, even in fiction. Even in fiction, it is so rare that I've never come across it, though I have come across stories of happy arranged marriages. The element of choice is so present, and he does not make the choice once. He honours this choice till the end, to the extent that some years later, Suleiman, our wicked cousin, who led him astray, becomes jealous when he sees his cousin living in wedded bliss and tries to ruin it for him, and fails because Mevlut was standing on business and loving his wife. Quote, Surely you must know Raya. He's telling Raya at a mutual cousin's house or something. All those letters Mevlut wrote when he was in the military were meant for Samia. What? I read some of them before I passed them to Vedia to give to you. Those eyes Mavlut wrote about were not your eyes, Raya. Being a wicked man, Suleiman tries to justify his wickedness, quote, I had no intention of upsetting poor Raya, but in the end, isn't the truth what matters most? When she gets home, I doubt she'll ask him. She'll cry about it for sure. But once she's thought it over, she'll realize everything I told her is true. Wicked man, end quote. Then Raya does her own thinking, flitting between her doubts and her certainty. Mevlut's words and actions over the years and weighing him up on the scale of her heart. Quote, as soon as I saw Mevlut's sweet boyish face that evening, I knew Suleiman was lying. But the next morning, while the girls were out playing in the garden, I remember the way Mevlut had looked at me at Akshahir station the night we eloped, and I became uneasy again. Suleiman had been the one driving the van that day. I took the letters out from where I had kept them, and I read them through again. I felt relieved. They sounded exactly the way Mevlut talks to me when we're alone together. I felt guilty for having paid any mind to Suleiman's lies. But then I remember that Suleiman had brought me the letters, and I felt unsure. She even talks to Samia, her sister, who of course cannot say much. She doesn't know. Or does she? But luckily, Mevlut has throughout the years said and done enough to show Raya that he loves her and how much, that she's able to re-stabilize eventually and continue being happy for the rest of her life. Some things in life are secrets. They are hidden away in deep wells, and even if we could go down to those depths, we would find them unfathomable. Even if we could fathom the mystery, we would find it impossible to apply to our own lives. We would lack the resources, the time, the will, and soon our own lives would end, and the mystery would remain. However, in reading this book, a strangeness in my mind, reading it once and again, going through it, pondering its words as I was preparing for GCSEs, I've come to this conclusion. It's very much what I said in the episode on the Prophet. Love is a verb. It is active and demands participation. It is therefore a daily choice, and we cannot rely on our feelings. The emotions of yesterday must be accompanied by the actions of today, and so on. Mevlut's resolution and his loyalty, his devotion as the author describes it, buys him great happiness. I will now read some excerpts from the book describing how happy Mevlut and Raya were in the early days after he made that choice. They got married shortly before Ramadan, and our young lovers could not keep their hands off each other during those fasting hours, but they both took on their guilt as a sign of love, and for Mevlut, there was something else. Quote, what he felt most guilty about during Ramadan was his failing to resist temptation with Raya during fasting hours. Like her, he was smart enough to know that these were the happiest days of his life, and this happiness was too great for regret to dampen it. So he understood that his guilt sprang from a deeper source, the heart of someone who had been admitted to paradise by accident, without really deserving it. End quote. This man was tricked into marrying the wrong girl, and by so doing was transported to paradise, guys. May such blessings follow you. In fact, you may be wondering, so what about the girl that he loved and wrote those letters to? Won't it be awkward when he sees her again? They're sisters. Well, as I said earlier, when you elope, you're essentially telling your parents of your intention to marry, with or without them. But of course, you want them involved to make everything official, because marriage is, and has always been, a family affair. So, Mevlut had made sure that they found a sympathetic imam to marry them so they could have sex, but they still needed to do all the official proper things so their family could be involved. 3 months later, Raya's dad has had time to process, and it's time for everyone to meet and do things properly. At the wedding, Mevlut cannot keep his eyes off his bride. He's looking at her, admiring her. She goes to the bathroom. He's like, oh my gosh, where is she? She comes back with two girls wearing the same color scarf as her. One of the girls says to him, quote, Mevlut, I can see how happy Raya is, and I'm so happy for both of you, end quote. They take their seats at their fancy table in their velvet chairs as bride and groom again, and Raya says, quote, didn't you recognize her? That was my little sister, Samia. She's really the one with the beautiful eyes. End quote. Ah. What happened there? Was he pretending not to notice? No, because Suleiman, the worst or best cousin in the world, quotes, notes, quote, I thought at first Mevlut had skillfully kept his emotions in check, but then I realized, no, he hadn't even recognized Samia, the beautiful girl he had written all those letters to. End quote. Listen, Mevlut isn't even thinking about her at all. His mind is on his wife, how beautiful she is. Remember when he called her the ugly sister? Anyway, her joy at little things makes him happy, and he's thinking about how much marriage has changed him. He's grown so much in these 3 months. Quote, Mevlut felt that he had known Raya for years and slowly began to believe that his letters had been meant for someone like her, perhaps even for Raya herself. Friends, find you a Mevlut, someone who's happy to just mind their business and be happy. If you end up with someone who is never satisfied, one of those people who's always comparing themselves to everyone else, watching everyone else's happiness and never doing anything to build happiness at home, ash. Good tough. If you can find someone who is happy to see you shiny and golden and treat you like something valuable, that's it. It's a wrap. Your happiness is written in stone. I really enjoyed thinking about this book, trying to work it out for myself, and I'm so happy that you could join me. I feel like I'm closer to understanding Mevlut, and I hope one day, when I have my own talk show, to meet couples like Mevlut and Raya, people whose destiny wrote itself and took them to places that they did not expect, people who felt maybe that they were settling and ended up finding that they had been admitted into paradise. I love a happy story, and anytime I have the opportunity to be happy for other people, it makes me happy. I am content to warm my feet at your fires, even at a distance. In this cold world, we need all the joy we can get, and the story of Mevlut and Raya continues to be a source of joy for me. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you will join me tomorrow to talk about the other side of love with Alfred, Lord Tennyson, and the Lady of Shalott.